Ibra di testa, Tonali, gol! Sandro! Meritato! Sandro!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Talgrood.
What's up, guys? We're here. I don't know how glad we are about it, but we're here. We got injuries to report, friendlies to cry over, and games to dwell on. So we're here. We're going to do it. We're doing it for you. Glad to be back.
Yeah, and happy new year to everyone as well, of course. 2022 was a very memorable one for us Milan fans, and we can only hope that 2023 is the same. But it certainly hasn't started on the brightest of notes with all the injury news that AJ alluded to there. I can maybe count myself as one of the injured crew. I seem to have come down with cold, flu, whatever it might be, whatever it develops into. But I'm soldiering on for you guys, the listeners. So apologies if my voice sounds a bit ropey. I'm going to do the best I can. We've got a friendly to recap, the last winter friendly, and a couple of games to preview, one of which I'll actually be going to as well. So I'm excited for that. So yeah, without further ado, let's very quickly recap the final friendly of the winter quartet, shall we say. I guess just like the Arsenal and Liverpool games, it perhaps wasn't close to our first starting 11, although it was resembled it more than the games in Dubai did. But this was a disaster near enough from start to finish. I mean, obviously all those guys were discussing the game as it was happening in the group chat. And I've never seen such an outpouring of negative emotion towards a friendly before. And rightly, there are those people who will say it is a friendly, it doesn't matter, it was a conditioning exercise, it was more about getting minutes in the legs of some players who haven't played as much. However, there does still need to be some positives to take from a final game before you kick off the season again in like 6 days' time. And there were basically none.
There was nothing.
Defense looked crap. We had no control on the game. We didn't create many chances, and the ones we did were not taken at all. It was grim.
Yeah, I mean, you said it doesn't resemble the full squad, and while yes, that is true, this was as close as we're going to get anytime soon. I mean, luckily we had four players out of... I'm struggling. Sorry. Four of the 11 players that started this weren't in our typical starting 11. Yeah. Obviously, Mignon's not coming back anytime soon, so you could expect that one. Morante was even worse than Tata Rushanu, so can't believe I'm saying this, but we need to start Tata tomorrow, and I've said like 3 weeks in a row, I'd never have to see him again. I'm so happy, and surprise, I do. But then you had Rebic, Adli, and Dest making up the entire left side there from striker, left wing, and left back. Dest should never be a left back. I mean, he looked worse there than I've ever seen him, and we've seen him look pretty fucking bad. So that was shocking. Adli, I get why he doesn't play in the league anymore. Like, we were all confused because he had a good preseason, but then we saw him a little bit during the season. He looked bad, and then we see him during these, I guess, mid-season friendlies, and he looked really bad. But besides that, I mean, we had CDK, Salamaker's returned. Those are starters. Our entire starting midfield until now, and Bennacer, but our starting center backs and Tomori Kalulu. We had our starting right back returning Calabria, who I will say was probably the best of the bunch, which is good because he's coming back from injury, obviously. And so, you know, you don't want to rush him, especially with our team. But yeah, it's scary. Obviously, Teo, Liao, and Giroud are huge, and that's going to make everything gel. And I think we're going to see leaps and bounds from this game to Salernitana tomorrow, but it's still, it doesn't fill me with any, you know, warm, bubbly feelings. It's scary because Tonali looked the worst he's ever looked. Bennacer looked like he wasn't quite there. You know, CDK has just been CDK, and Tomori and Kalulu looked really bad as well. Kalulu kind of picked up towards the end. He came off around the hour mark. I think they all did. I think the entire 11.
Yeah, we virtually changed. I think it was 10 players or 9 players.
Yeah.
Around the hour mark, which perhaps says a lot.
Because it was everyone but Rebic. Rebic came off at halftime.
Yeah.
Because he had that injury. Yeah.
Yeah. And Lazetic came on as well, of course. And we just didn't see an awful lot from him either. I mean, I think part of the starting lineup was experimental. I do think that's important to note. Obviously, we have two natural left-backs in the squad, Teo Hernandez, who had just returned to training the day of the friendly, And we have Ballatore, who, of course, came on in the second half and dislocated his shoulder. So he's going to be out for 4 weeks. And we will recap the injury situation shortly. But Dest at left back, therefore, was sort of just testing the waters a little bit to see if he could possibly do it should the need for it arise, given we played like 7 games in the next month.
Who do you think was worst at left back, Dest or Pobega?
Do you know, I wanted to say Pobega straight away there, but Dest was kind of responsible for the fact that Madueke turned into like prime.
All 3 goals.
Prime Mbappe. Yeah, it was mental of that, you know. That you can tell that him and I think as well, Tomori is one of those players who is he's obviously got the individual capabilities and qualities to be able to make these goal-saving tackles, and he reads the game well, but he relies a lot on the chemistry with those around him. Mm-hmm. So when Tatarashanu's in goal, he doesn't look himself positionally. I'm hoping that now he's back with Kalulu, they'll gel again straight away, and we have that pairing back that was so massive in winning the Scudetto. But you could just tell him and Dest, they hadn't worked it out in terms of coverage. They didn't know who was supposed to be following Madueke inside. He got a lot of joy cutting in from their right, our left flank, and yeah, a couple of left-footed shots that Mirante arguably could have done a little bit better on both of them, to be honest. I mean, he got beat at his near post for the first one. The second one was well placed. I'll give him that.
He almost scored an own goal by punching the ball out and it magically going backwards.
And that was. And another bad sign is that was CDK's only contribution of the game, was to head the ball off the line to prevent an own goal. You know, it was an important opportunity for a lot of players. I think Adley, I only give half sort of weight to, because he was playing on the left and he barely ever did that at Bordeaux, let alone with us. So it was a bit of an unfamiliar position for him, but we didn't see much from him. CDK, we were hoping that, you know, post-World Cup, he'd have sprung into life and that a friendly might give him that spark needed to go and take 2023 by storm. But he just looked as anonymous as ever to me. As you said, the midfield double pivot really struggled. They seemed to be so much more intense and switched on than us. They just passed through us at times.
Yeah.
And then Rebic up front. I mean, as it turns out, he was probably carrying an injury at least by the end of the half. But that was a dog shit performance from him, unfortunately. The only thing that he did was shoot wide when he should have hit the target. And then, if you take the attacking performance out of it, and there's not really an awful lot to go on, nothing really clicked. The 3 goals conceded were just really, really poor. Even the first one wound up across from the left and an absolute free header for their right back, I think it was, who pushed on into the box. And it was a great header, don't get me wrong. But I didn't like a lot of what I saw. And as I say, it comes with the caveat that it is a friendly game, and perhaps it was more experimenting than this is how it's going to be for the next few games. And of course, the big sign will come tomorrow against Salernitana. But again, it just gives me this big feeling after those 2 friendlies in Dubai of like, what was the point of all this?
Yeah,
are the players really going to take confidence from constant beatings? Because they were going to have the day off afterwards. And Pioli cancelled it and called them all into training. He said it wasn't punishment, but it was just to try and iron out some tactical things that they'd noticed. That, to me, suggests that they put quite a lot of significance in this game.
To say it's not a punishment is completely for the media. That's absolutely a punishment. You know, being forced to work on your day off is a punishment no matter who you are. Nobody wants to do that. And when it's because you put in such a poor shift the day prior that you're like, hey, you got to come back to work today and correct some wrongs. Like, it's a punishment. And, you know, we're not calling it a retreat or anything like that because it's just one day, but it's a punishment. They deserve it. They need to do better. You know, I don't know if they just took that summer vacation mentality to their little winter break here or what, but, you know, it's scary that the players who weren't at the World Cup are still doing as bad as they are. The starters that weren't at the World Cup, you know, like, they obviously had their vacation too as well. And I get that they needed it. Everyone did, but Tomori should be better. Kalulu should be better. Tonali should be better. Benacer should be better. you know, like if Giroud comes back and he's tired and he doesn't score for the next three games, like he's got a bit of an excuse built in the fact that he was in a World Cup final. He played every game and he played every game prior, and now he's got to play every game after. Like he's had no break. You know, if he comes back and he's a little tired and can't quite cut it, that makes sense. But our entire midfield, who wasn't at the World Cup, who was with us training throughout, they need to be performing, and they need to be performing better than they were before the break, but they're not. And that's the scary part. And you look at the games against Arsenal, you look at the games against Liverpool. Yes, they were closer to restarting their season than we are, and they're also just simply better teams at this point in time. So I don't have issues with us losing those games. At least we were competitive, and I believe we scored in each game, did we not?
Yeah. Scored in both.
And we couldn't do that against PSV. Yes. I mean, I don't know where their season's at right now. I don't really follow the Dutch league, but
we should second be doing in the better. League. But yeah, still, you know,
we should have been doing better, especially against them. Like for the final one, days before we kick off a doubleheader week. You know, I mean, like you said, we have 7 competitive games this month and 3 competitions, and we couldn't even get a goal in our final friendly against PSV. I don't know, man.
Definitely a 5-0 win incoming tomorrow now, you know.
I fucking hope so. We need it. I'm so sick of waking up and just being grumpy the second I look at the chat, but it's been every day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what else you can logically draw from it all. Aside from the disappointment that we don't seem to be up to match rhythm yet. But of course, that will all change if we put in a brilliant performance tomorrow. And I almost think it's needed because there's so much concern at the moment regarding all the injuries, the various crises that have popped up around the squad. And obviously that friendly performance that didn't help. I almost feel like a response is almost a necessity. Otherwise, the panic's going to set in a little bit. Interesting that Madueke scored those 2 goals and we were linked with him the very next day. I think it was Corriere dello Sport who linked us with him.
I think that's an easy tactic from the media given our history with Jens Petter, and I believe we did it with someone else as well, didn't we?
Yeah, probably. I can't think off the top of my head. I can't remember who,
but it seems like every time one player goes off in a friendly, like we're linked the very next day now because of that, and it's just, I don't know. I don't buy it until I see something, because that Jens Petter one was done in 2 days, 3 days. All this other stuff's just noise.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Noise that Liao seems to like, by the way. He keeps liking all of our tweets on on Twitter. So
yeah, people kind of went wild about the João Felix stuff, and then he liked the Kola Muani stuff. And
he liked the Mama Duque, the PSV guy.
Big. Oh, did he? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, and you like the one about the fan attendance as well. I've become like a little Liao stalker, so if you're listening, I apologize, but I've been going through his likes, and it's just us. I'm like, all right, yeah, that's fucking cool.
If you haven't done that already, then go through and have a look at what our biggest fan is thinking about all these rumours. But yeah, I decided to look at Madueke's stats for the season, and he's only played 3 games. Scored 1 goal, seems to be a bit injury-prone, but is what it is. I think it was a bit of a lazy, perhaps easily predictable link from the media, but he did take his 2 goals really well against us. So yeah, that was it. Bad trip to Holland, and the first game of 2023 awaits us tomorrow. We travel to the Stadio Arechi to face Salernitana. We drew there 2-2 last season in what was probably one of our most underwhelming performances of the season, given that they were rock bottom at the time, and it felt a bit like a Benevento type game where we'd gone to the bottom team and dropped points again, and it was typical Milan. Ante Rebic bailed us out with a fairly late equaliser that time, but it did feel like we'd lost massive ground in the Scudetto race. Just to first of all recap the injury situation, the treatment room is pretty much full again. Every time it looks like it's going to get empty, it fills up, but you know, I don't understand how we've come back from this Dubai trip with the squad in a worse state than what it was before. I think some serious questions need to be asked about the medical staff. But we've got Mike Maignan now, obviously. He deserves a discussion of his own. I really do not. We talked about this last week. I don't understand what the fuck has gone on there. I really don't. Because, again, mentioned this last time, but our understanding was that he was close to making the World Cup squad. You know, so, it's a late decision. And now his calf has just not healed, whatever that means.
So, and I read this today, which actually made sense to me, but I don't understand the why. I understand the reasoning of what they're saying. I just don't know how it gets to that point. But they're saying that the scar tissue necessary to repair the tear is simply just not developing. So it's still just torn. Like his body's just not healing. And I get that you can't play on that because if it, you don't have the scar tissue, it's just going to keep tearing and tearing and tearing and eventually not going to have a muscle there. So once you have the scar tissue, then it's solid again. Like we all have a scar somewhere on our body, I would presume. You could feel it. It's tougher. It's harder. It's likely not to open again. Yeah, scar tissue is weaker, but it's really not going to open unless it's like a massive fucking gash on your forehead or something. So you need that to develop. And the fact it isn't, I don't understand why it's not. I don't know anything about why it wouldn't, but that's what I read today. And I'm very confused by that, but I don't know. It sounds dangerous. It sounds probably like the pitch is too tough if he's still, you know, doing training exercises on that and it's too tough and still constantly, because it's the calf. You can't not use your calf, you know, unless you're in a wheelchair every day, which he's not. So I don't.
Maybe should be.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say throw him some PEDs, but like, what the fuck, man? We need to give him something. We need to get him back. Like, well, give him some HGH. I don't know. Up his test levels, EPO, something. I don't care what it is. Just inject the boy with some chemicals. Yeah.
Crazy. I don't know what's happened there either. You just presume with a muscle injury that it is frustrating and it might take a few weeks and you need rest and you need a specific recovery program in order to get the muscle from, if it's a low grade injury, even a high grade injury, to get it from where it is back to being 100%, and you can't take any risks and you can't rush that process. But as I say, we've gone from he might make the World Cup squad to all of a sudden he won't, to us expecting him to play in some of those friendlies and then he didn't. And we got told he's going to miss the Salernitana game. And now we're being told that even the Supercoppa game against Inter might be a stretch. And that's
we're here later this month. February 14th against Spurs might be his first game back.
I mean, like, that to me, it's almost like by the time that he comes back, the length that he will have been out will be getting close to sort of a broken bone territory. Seriously, he'll have been out for months.
Yeah.
An inquest is needed.
What was Calabria's injury? He had a... What was his? I can't remember.
His was like a complete tear of one of his muscles.
And he's back already.
Yeah, he had to be stretched off. And then Salamakers was his knee, to be fair.
And he's back already. Things that should be long-term injuries versus Mike, something who days of rest.
Maybe the time has come to cast the spotlight slightly on Maignan as well. Like, for some reason, has his body just given in? Because he got injured last season as well during a pretty critical phase.
I mean, they were completely different circumstances. Like, he got stamped on the wrist by Suarez last season. And so I give him pass on that. Yeah, it's Luis Suarez.
Wasn't it Salah?
I thought it was Luis Suarez.
It was the Liverpool game, wasn't it?
No, it was the first one against Atletico.
He'd done it against Liverpool when saving the penalty, hadn't he? And then he was playing injured.
That's right.
I think
that's probably what it was.
Yeah. I see what you mean.
But anyways, I mean, that is inflicted during the game by another player that wasn't him. This one was just during training. I mean, it was the only international break of the season. And just, of course, the last day, as it always is with us, he just, pain in his calf, you know, be out 3 weeks. Like, all right, that sucks, but it is what it is. And then here we are, you know, about to enter the restart in January, and he's expected 2 more months. Like, it doesn't make sense. I don't know what causes it or how this gets to this point, but I don't know if we want to blame him yet. I mean, obviously his body's having issues recovering, but is that because of his body or is that because of what we're doing in the treatment center? You know, I don't know. I guess I'm really confused on it. I don't have an answer.
Yeah, I think
because he had no injuries prior to joining us. He was immaculate record.
He was basically a clean bill of health, which is why I think the way that this injury has been managed is definitely the thing to look at rather than him in particular. But I mean, if his muscle's not responding to it, then I don't know what's going on. I wish there'd just a bit more transparency about things. But yeah, we've got to wait to get Mike back. And then Simon Kjær, it was confirmed today he won't be travelling for the Salernitana game because he's doing individual work to try and get back to being 100%. I don't really know what all that's about because we were told that he was fine again, but seems to have regressed. Balotelli dislocated his shoulder. In fairness, that's a bit of a freak injury. He did fall nastily on it and he looked in agony. So he had surgery on it. So obviously, best wishes to him in his recovery. Florenzi and Ibra, which we knew about, their kind of long-term absences. Juninho Macias and Rade Krunic came back from Dubai with muscle fatigue, and that seems to still be there.
And Origi.
Yeah, and now Origi has a problem, and Rebic as well. So there's 9 players missing for tomorrow's game when we were previously hoping there would be 2.
And did you mention Kjær as well or no?
Yeah, Kjær, yeah. So, yeah, that's where we're at. Like, sort of every department is depleted in some way, and this is what Pioli has to deal with. You know, it must be frustrating for him. He said in his pre-match press conference that he takes the blame because he's in charge of everything that goes on at Milanello, but I think he's just falling on a sword that he's put out there for himself. Yeah. I think really what he wants to say is we're looking into this because this is not normal. Yeah. But that being said, again, other teams are also having these problems this season because of the nature of the schedule. I think like Brozovic is now a doubt for the Super Cup final, and then there's
Vlahovic
is, yeah. So other teams are getting hit with big injuries apart from Napoli, it seems. So maybe there is something in that, but yeah, it does seem like we get the worst look. Salernitana, anyway, they're 12th in the table. They're doing quite well. They've won 4 of their opening 15 games. Of course, last season they had a bit of a miracle escape because they're in the bottom 3 for all but the last 4 rounds. Davide Nicola engineered this incredible turnaround and they ended up finishing 1 point above the bottom 3. They signed some interesting players this summer, and they're doing well. They've steered themselves quite far clear of the bottom 3. They've had a couple of impressive wins. Like they won away at Lazio and they won 4-0 at home against Sampdoria, albeit Sampdoria seemed to be crap this season. So I don't think that they're necessarily going to be an absolute walkover.
I agree,
especially considering that we thought we'd walk over them last season and we fumbled the bag big time.
I agree with you there. That all said, they haven't won a game since before Halloween. I mean, I guess that's only 3 games.
Not like 2 games. Oh, 3 games, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. But 4 games. 4 games. But still, even their friendlies, I mean, their friendlies have gone as bad as ours, and they played Fenerbahce and Alanyaspor. So those aren't doing too well. They got smoked 3-0 to Monza in their last competitive game. 2-1 to Fiorentina right before that, a 2-2 draw to Cremonese before that. One thing I will say is they're scoring goals in their games. They're finding the back of the net, something we're struggling to do, and something that we're struggling to prevent is goals going in. So definitely wouldn't expect a clean sheet. I don't know. I'm pessimistic on this one, but also Leao Teo and Giroud coming back, having Calabria back, our back line outside of the keeper is going to be the most solid it's been since the end of last season. And I do see sparks of Salamakers finding some form. It's just a matter of how many minutes does he have in him, you know, coming back from this long-term injury. I don't know if he's ready to jump into a full 90. And without Macias to back him up, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, and same with Calabria. I don't know how long he's going to be able to do it. So I think we have to kind of start fast and score an early goal and not let up. We need to score 2 early goals or something and just build a lead. I can't believe I'm saying we need to do this against Salernitana, but I just don't foresee a way where we get all 3 points unless we get a couple early goals. Or it's just a shit game and then we score in the end. You know, like those are our 2 options. But I just don't see a comfortable win here right now.
No, and that's probably a sad indictment of everything that's come over the last. It probably extends to 2 months because we kind of limped our way into the break. Even though we won our last game against Fiorentina, it had been a real slog. Yeah. And then that Spezia home, we even relied on a last-minute winner. And like we just hadn't been convincing in our performances right up until the break. And then everything that's happened over the break and the friendlies. I also am not predicting a high-scoring win or anything like that. It could happen that way because it seems that Salernitana are a bit more open this season. They're not playing to win every game 1-0. And as you say, they're scoring goals. And I don't know. I think this has the potential to be a banana skin. They're two up front. Boule Dia, he scored in the World Cup for Senegal and he has 6 Serie A goals this season. And then the other one's Piontek, who we know well enough, unfortunately. It seems to be written in the stars that he'll probably score against us. I actually don't know what their home form's been like compared to their away form, but it's usually the case that they'd be stronger at home. That being said, I'm going to predict a 1-0 win. I think it's going to be an awful, awful game. Like you said, the second possibility.
Yeah.
Dog shit game, and we just get one late on. And it kind of papers over some cracks. I hope to be wrong, and I hope it's a barnstorming game, and I hope we score plenty of goals, and I hope everyone looks as though they were match fixing during the friendly games. But I just don't see it. I think it's going to take some time before every team settles into rhythm, not just us, because there's been so many moving parts.
So my thought process here is, Salernitana is not resting on one goal leads when they get them. I mean, every win they've had, they've scored multiple goals, even most of their draws. So I think we're going to push early, and so are they, because they sense us kind of weakened right now. I'm just going to leave them open, and I think we'll score first. They're going to bounce back immediately, then try to sit on that draw, and it's going to be a shit game. And then we're either going to concede in the end and lose, or we're going to get a winner in the end. But I do think it's going to be 2 quick goals, 1 from each team, and then a late winner from someone. So I know that's a very broad prediction, but that's what
it's
I got.
It's actually a pretty specific prediction.
Fair.
Yeah.
I just don't know who it's going to be that wins.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that I wouldn't be stunned if we dropped points, you know, and that is pretty grim.
And it's a terrible time for that too. I mean, looking at Napoli's next schedule, yes, they're playing Sampdoria on the weekend. That's almost a guaranteed win for them. But I mean, they could potentially drop 6 of 9 points in the next 3 against Inter tomorrow and Juve next week. Like, we could be looking, if all things go right for us, we could be in first on the 14th of this month. I highly doubt it. Highly doubt it. But anything could happen. That's why we play the games.
Yeah, that's true. It's and another thing as well, I don't like the time that this is being played at. 12:30 in the afternoon, because it's a bank holiday in Italy, which means it's a 11:30 start for us in the UK. And
6:30
a.m. I mean, that is... I just hope... Are you waking up for it? I presume you are.
I will. I'll wake up for it. I'll be working till 9 p.m. tomorrow, so that's fantastic to, you know, wake up that early. But
better be worth it. That's all
it won't
say.
Be I promise you that both job and game will not be worth it.
At least if things are going bad, you can just turn off at halftime. Yeah,
exactly.
So yeah, that's the first game of 2023, and then because it's such a compact month of January and beyond, we play again on Sunday night against Roma. I will be going to this game. I'm dragging the missus along to her first ever Milan game, first game at San Siro as well. She really wanted to go and see Roma specifically because she loves Jose Mourinho. I've told her that she's got to keep quiet about that while she's in our section. But I think she knows that, and I think she'll be supporting Milan regardless. But I'm really looking forward to going back. I haven't actually been to attend a home game since before COVID because of various different fuck-ups that happened at government.
You and I have tried to go together multiple times since COVID. And
something always happens. And, you know, the other day I saw the headline that there's been another sort of surge in COVID cases due to the amount of Chinese travellers, and that Italy in particular was getting hit hard. And I just thought, is it me that's the problem? You know, every time I book a trip, something seems to come up. But,
you know, I decided I'm not going to book any in January anymore, because that's been when it's been each time.
Yeah,
I think the winter surge probably, but we're booking it for the first week of May. Doubleheader against Cremonese and Lazio. So still a Roman team, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. American Airlines, you owe me $850. I'll never forget.
That's our chances of a sponsorship from then gone, but maybe that's how they can help repay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm, as I said, looking forward to this one. Should be a sellout crowd, which would be fantastic. Sunday night under the lights, and against a Roma side that have had a really, really interesting season so far. They sit in seventh place, which of course is outside even the Conference League spot, but they are tied on points with Atalanta above them and have the exact same record as them. They started the season pretty well. They won 7 of their first 10 games, but they lost against Atalanta and 4-0 against Roma in that period. And then since then, they've failed to win their last three. They lost the derby against Lazio at the start of November. They drew with Sassuolo, and then they drew with Torino just before the break.
Yeah, they've been fucking abysmal.
They play Bologna at home before they play us. So that might be an indicator of how...
Where is Bologna's in 11th? Yeah. But significantly behind in points. I mean, the gap is the same as us first Inter or Napoli. So there's that. Just looking at their recent fixtures, obviously they lost to Lazio in the derby November. And then, as you just mentioned, the draw against Sassuolo and then the draw against Torino. Those were their last three competitive games. But then you go into their friendlies. They drew 0-0 against Nagoya Grampus. I don't know where that team plays. I believe Japan.
Yeah.
And then a 3-3 draw to Yokohama Marinos, also in Japan.
Japan, yeah.
Then they lost 3-0 to Cadiz. Then they finally get two wins in their friendlies against Casapia and Wawichk. I don't know, a Dutch team, I believe, in a Dutch second division.
Oh, Walwijk. Yeah, they are Walwijk, Dutch. Yeah, but they are. Division, yeah. They are. They might even be. I think definitely bottom end of the first division.
Yeah, they're in 10th place right now. But still, I mean, that's not good. And then Casapia is a Portuguese team, and they're sitting 5th in the Portuguese league, which is admittedly decent. But, I guess we should have done better against PSV, so I can't really slate them for those wins. But just looking at the Cadiz and the Japan fixtures, plus their competitive ones, it's interesting. I don't know. So I actually have more faith that we beat Roma than I do Salernitana.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I feel like this is a better matchup for us. I feel like we went through a really weird patch, perhaps towards the back end of what people call the banter era, where we really struggled to beat Roma at home because Roma were pretty good and always fighting for second, or the Champions League places at least. And they seemed to do a job on us most times. But then something just switched, and since then it feels as though... It was actually that we beat them 2-0 in the 1920 season. And then since then, it felt like we've had the number on them at home. And Mourinho's Mourinho. Like, I do feel as though football has kind of left him behind from a tactical point of view. Like, he isn't going to be able to compete with what you'd call modern coaches. Like, even in Europe, they were tied on points with Ludogorets for the final... for the second spot in the group to go through to the knockout stages of the Europa League, and they went a goal behind, but eventually won 3-1. But they had a scare in that group, and they should have won it comfortably, to be honest. Although Betis are a good side, they actually drew Salzburg in the next stage. So that's quite funny. But yeah, they haven't been firing this season at all. I don't think that they've really got what they wanted from Dybala just yet. Zaniolo is incredibly hit and miss now, as we know. Abraham's probably been the biggest drop-off from last season. I had him down, actually, as Serie A top scorer in our pre-season predictions, but he can't hit a barn door at the moment. Like, his XG is so much higher than the actual goals that he scored because he's missing big chances. The midfield's kind of all over the place. He can't settle on a back three. They're not in great shape coming into this. Obviously, the Bologna game will let us know if they've turned any corners miraculously, but I do feel a bit more confident about this one than I do the Salernitana game, which is probably wrong.
I wonder how Dybala is going to look, or if he even plays. I mean, obviously, he just won the World Cup. He didn't play much in it, but he did win. I believe he scored a penalty in the shootout. But, I mean, I looked at the eyes of Emi Martinez. I looked at Lisandro Martinez. Same last name. But a bunch of the Argentina players have not looked like they've been sleeping. And I don't blame them. They've been out partying. Good for them. They should be. So I wonder if Dybala will even play, you know, if he's match ready. I feel like he should be because he didn't play much in the actual tournament, but I don't know. It's something to think about, I guess. It's hard to predict a game when there's a game prior.
Yeah, that is true. As we found out with our bloody injury situation, anything can happen. I'm just going to try and look at what Roma's predicted lineup is for the next game. But yeah, in the meantime, my prediction, I don't see us keeping a clean sheet in this. I do think Roma still have attacking weapons that could probably hurt us. But I do also see us scoring from a selfish point of view. I hope that I see a thriller and I hope that I see a Milan win. And I'm going to go with 2-1 to us.
Ooh. I mean, I'm just looking at our head-to-head as far back as 2020. And while we've won all but one game, which we drew 3-3, we've conceded in every single game as well. So I wouldn't count on much. I mean, one of the games we won did have Tata in goal. The other one was Mike. I'm just looking at that lineup. It should be the exact same back line that we're going to play them. So, I mean, that's good as well. The exception is Kier instead of Kalulu. Ironically, Teo got a red card in that game. But
yeah,
I think 2-1 is probably a safe bet on this one. I am going to predict a victory here. I mean, we don't lose to this team anymore. At least we haven't this decade. So it's probably around the corner. It's probably this time.
Yeah, and if we did lose to them, it would be near enough game over in the title race, unless Napoli have also messed up somewhere, then yeah, it'd be tough. We really need to win these next two. Obviously, we need to win every game. That's the position that we're in, really. But as you alluded to, like, Napoli have some challenging fixtures coming in the next few. And if we are going to gain ground straight away and we are going to put doubt into them, then it has to kind of come in the next few games. I mean, if they were to lose or draw against Inter and they were to mess up against Juve, then that doubt will creep in, but it'll only do so if we take advantage of it, you know. And a bad set of results for us in the month of January could potentially see us fifth.
We could be outside of Europe in general, to be honest. I mean, the gap's not that big.
Yeah. Yeah, and just on the Roma team news front, predicted 11 for tomorrow. The front three has Dybala, Tammy Abraham and Zaniolo. Pellegrini and Cristante as the midfielders. Mancini, Smalling, Ibanez as the back three. Rui Patricio in goal. I do like that Zalewski. I think it might be Zalewski, actually, the left wing back that they've got. We were linked with him, but he played for Poland at the World Cup and he looks really good. And then they've got Celik as the right wing, Matt, who, again, we were also linked with. Seems like we're linked with everyone, but we can't sign him. So, yeah, fingers crossed for 3 points. And probably now's the time to mention that if the recording schedule stays as it is, I might not be on next week. But next time I am on, I'll recap the experience and everything. And hopefully it was a good one. We've signed a player. None of us saw this one coming. This came out of absolutely nowhere. I don't think anybody had heard of this guy. No disrespect intended with that, but he was playing in the Paraguayan top flight. Devis Vasquez is his name. He plays for
Milan now.
He plays for us now. He did play for
something with a G.
I can't remember. Club Guarani. Yeah, that was it. It really did come out of left field. I mean, we knew that we would probably be in the market for a new goalkeeper because that has been all of the speculation up to this point. But I think we were all expecting a more experienced and more well-known name to arrive. But this one got done very quickly. He flew over, did his medicals. He got officially announced like an hour before we started recording this. Now he's got to go back to Colombia to resolve some bureaucratic stuff and then he'll be back in 15 days and available. What his role is probably going to be as a third choice goalkeeper. That probably be fair to presume. Now, whether he goes and plays a bit with the Primavera or whether we look at loaning him out instantly, I don't know. There seems to be a bit of mystery surrounding what'll happen with his role straight off the bat. But he's definitely more of a prospect for the future rather than for the right now.
Yeah, I mean, from my understanding is Tata and Morante are both expiring in the summer, and there's zero chance either of getting renewed at this point. So I think the idea is we need to replace both of them. And that makes sense as well, because DiMarzio said we're going for Sergio Rico on a short-term loan for the rest of the season, which sounds like the right now guy, which is honestly scary that we're even doing it if Mike's only supposed to be out for, you know, a month and a half. Mm. But that's what we said quite a few times this season. So,
yeah,
it's worrisome. But I don't know. I think I'm not too high on this guy simply because no one really knows anything about him, which doesn't mean he's bad. But from what I've seen, he doesn't look that great either. Granted, it's only very, very, very limited film on the guy. I mean, I've never watched the Paraguayan league. I reached out to Roberto Rojas, who is the only person I know who actually follows the league. If you guys don't follow him, definitely give him a follow. He's a fantastic guy. But he wasn't too high on him. He said he doesn't know if he's even better than Tata or Morante. So that's worrisome. Another guy, another account, Paraguayan Ralph, said good things about him and said that his stats don't reflect him because it was a team with a really poor front line or back line defense. So he blamed a lot of the goals conceded on that, which, you know, very well may be true. I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens if he even plays. I'm not opposed to giving him a shot. Like, at this point, what's the harm in trying? So I hope he gets minutes. I hope he gets some, but I don't know what's going to happen when he gets them.
Yeah, I think if this guy was 6 years younger, then I could understand it. It's a sign for the future. He can play youth team minutes. He could maybe get loaned out, and it's more for, you know, third choice from next season onwards. But he's 24, so he's pretty much the full product now. And the scouting reports that I've seen of him suggest that he can be a pretty good shot stopper. But he really struggles in commanding his area. And that doesn't fill me with an awful lot of confidence, because we really need someone who's confident and can lead from the back. We've seen Tomori shouting at Tata Reshanu enough times to know that that having that cohesiveness among the back five players is really, really important. And they have to trust that the keeper's going to come for crosses at the right time. As you say, if this guy plays or not, I don't know.
I do think that a fact of life is the older you get, the worse your reflexes get. And as a goalkeeper, that's kind of your biggest asset, is your reflexes. And we're seeing Tata without those. We're seeing Morante try to make them and looking really bad. So at the very least, at 24 years old, if he's quick with his reflexes, I think he's going to save some shots that the others wouldn't. So I don't see how it could hurt to throw him in there. He's younger. He's going to put his body on the line more likely. He still has a career ahead of him. I mean, yes, we know he's no longer a youth product at 24, but he's not even close to 30, you know? Like, I mean, we're playing Tata, who's 37. We're playing Morante, who's 39. Playing Giroud, who's 36. Like, he's got time to grow, and he has an opportunity to earn a spot on the team. So if we give him playing time, I think he's going to give everything he has to get that, because his career's been wasting away in Paraguay. No disrespect to Paraguay, but it's not a league where you're going to make, you know, a living for the rest of your life and be set. You're going to need to have more sources of income. And in Italy, you might get that. You might get a bit more. You might build a brand for yourself and be able to do more things with that. So I think he's definitely going to give his all. Why wouldn't you? I don't know. I think give him a chance. I know the first game that he'll be around for is a Super Cup, and I don't want him to play that, obviously, but give him a chance against one of these teams. We got 7 games in January. You know, like, yes, he's going to be gone for the first 2 of those, but give him the cup match. You know, give him something. Let's see what he could do. Let's just try it. That's all.
Yeah. And as an addition to that, you mentioned that DiMarzio said we're trying to sign Sergio Rico on loan from PSG. And if we do manage to do that, you know, in the next few days, meaning he'd be available before the end of the month, I really would give him a chance. you know, Rico's not a bad goalkeeper. He was pretty good at Sevilla. He's found himself third choice at PSG behind Donnarumma, who they've obviously invested a lot of money in, and Keylor Navas, who
won it all.
Yeah, exactly. And they've got a loyalty to him. So he's only third choice by sort of pre-established hierarchies that are understandable, but he's not a bad goalkeeper. And he's younger, he's in his prime.
He could start as a goalkeeper comfortably for a club that's, you know, in Europa League fighting for UCL, which we're obviously better than that, but Tata Rusanu is a goalkeeper that should be at like Salernitana, you know? Yeah. So I think it would be a great move if we got him, even if it's just a short-term loan. We know that, but he wants to play. He doesn't want to sit on the bench. I mean, yeah, it's great collecting trophies and a paycheck and not doing anything. Ask Bakayoko about that. But, you know, he wants to play. So, yeah, I'm happy with that move as well.
Yeah. And then the other news that came out, multiple sources have now confirmed this one. We actually made a bid for a winger from Santos who is 18 years old, called Angelo Gabriel. Again, it would probably be fair to say that not a lot of people would have known a lot about him unless you watch Brazilian football plenty, but seems an exciting kind of prospect. Once again, a player that has been linked with us for the right wing role that is certainly more for the future than ready-made. But this kid does have some pedigree. He was Copa Libertadores is the South American Champions League, and he's the youngest ever goal scorer in the history of that competition. He scored a goal when he was 16 for Santos. His numbers aren't particularly impressive. I think he scored three goals for them in 97 games, which isn't a fantastic return. It's sort of like Salamanca's numbers, but he'd be one for the future. It does sound like that there are other top teams sniffing around him, so they've obviously seen something. If it does become a bidding war that involves Premier League teams, we obviously won't win that bidding war. But I do find it interesting that we've put 15 million euros forward for a player like that.
Yeah, I do too. Especially because if we sign him, that would be our last non-EU spot since Davis Vasquez took the fifth one. So that's interesting. One thing I do know about this kid is he's the second youngest ever to debut for Santos, ahead of Pele and just behind Neymar, I believe. Like, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Neymar. But, young players flop all the time. Young players start hot. So that could mean nothing, but it could mean something. From what I've seen on scouting reports that are literally just on YouTube, you guys could look them up too. Likes to dribble, isn't afraid to go in tight spaces. Honestly, all the stereotypical Brazilian wonder kid characteristics, which are never a bad thing unless you have Jim Paulo as your coach. I'm taking shots today.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, look, it can't be, if anything, if he's Macias 2.0, at least we can develop him for 15 years, whereas Macias was obviously on his decline when he came in. And Salamakers is hit or miss. You know, it's not a bad signing. I think 15 mil might be a lot if he becomes a bad signing, but if he becomes a good signing, that's great. So yeah, I'm not against it at all. I would like to see it. I know, are we looking to sign him immediately or would it be a summer transfer?
I think it would be immediate because the season in South America runs winter to winter.
That's
so
right.
Like, this is their off season. So we'd be signing him mid season if we went for him in the summer.
Right.
But I wouldn't also be against us tying up a deal now and leaving him on loan there until the summer, because I'm not sure how much he gets thrown into the fray between now and the end of the current season. Although with the problems with Macias's physical condition, I mean, you know, he probably would get minutes. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, what I will say is that Moncada and probably Massara and the scouting team have had these intuitions about players from South America before. Admittedly, players that are a bit more established, but they really wanted Enzo Fernandez and we couldn't get that done. They really wanted Julian Alvarez and we couldn't get that done. There are other examples of players that we were in for. In fact, that guy who's now doing really well for Brighton, his name escapes me. But yeah, anyway, he was another one that that we were in for and didn't manage to sign. We do have a lot of scouts that are switched on in South America. So if they've seen something they like and there are other top teams that are interested, then there must be something there. So if 15 million euros is the price, then it means that there's probably quite a high ceiling with him. And it would be nice to see us invest as well. You know, if we're going to do this youth project thing, then sometimes you've got to bite the bullet and say he might only be 18 and his numbers might not be great, but we believe that he's going to become something good.
And we also don't know how many minutes each one of those games is. You know, he could be scoring in every start and then getting 5, 10, 15 minutes in the other matches that are making up those 93 games or whatever it is. You know, I don't know. I don't know if you know or not, but I didn't look into that. So another thing to think about. As far as our scouting network, we actually outsourced a scouting network in all of South America to a Brazilian company. So that explains Davis Vasquez. That explains Enzo Fernandez, Julian Alvarez, Angelo. I already forgot his last name. I apologize. Angelo Gabriel.
Moises Caicedo was the guy I was thinking of.
Oh, Caicedo. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, it explains all that. And this is something you and I actually talked about over the summer when I was told about it. So I'm not shocked to see these names coming up. I just don't know them, which also makes perfect sense because I don't watch the South American leagues. But I mean, there's a track record of absolute ballers coming out of these nations. I mean, obviously Argentina just won the fucking World Cup. Like, if that's not evident enough that South America has incredible talent waiting to be scooped up, then I don't know what is. So,
We'll see how that one develops. As I say, if there really is Premier League interest, we probably get outbid anyway, but it is what it is. Let's do a couple of questions and then we will wrap up the episode. First one comes from Hassan Abu-Jerry. It's actually a two-parter. Number one, what the hell happened to Mike Maignan? What kind of a calf injury is this? Any insight? I mean, we kind of discussed that already. And the problem, I guess, with the calf injury for a goalkeeper, just to add one more final thing on it, is that you rely on it so much, you know, for your quick movements off the line, for your kicking even, for your jumping and claiming crosses. And there's probably no way that you can do a training program, a training routine, without using it in some way. But whatever has happened is clearly not helping the scar tissue heal. We've been left in a position now where we're doubting when he's actually going to come back. It might be a case that he just needs straight up rest. Like, he might need a couple of weeks just laying in bed or whatever it might be to finally heal up. I wouldn't be surprised if things degenerate even more and we start hearing stuff like, you know, season over, or it shouldn't be that way, but like, it's gone on this long now that you start fearing the worst, or like surgery. I don't know if you probably wouldn't have surgery to repair a muscle, but yeah, it's not good. It's not good. We miss him a lot. He is a fifth leader of the defensive department, and I think we're a lot worse without him. The other question: thoughts on getting Luis Alberto for the number 10 role and shifting De Ketelaere to the right wing?
I haven't thought about Luis Alberto. I've nothing against him. It hasn't crossed my mind. I like the idea. I don't know how I feel about CDK on the right wing. I actually been throwing this idea in the chat, which is kind of ridiculous, but 3-5-2 and CDK up top, or a 3-4-1-2 with CDK up top and Liao in the hole. I don't know. I just, why not toy with something? Why not? The most expensive signing we've made in however many years, we got to figure out a way to unlock him. So if it's push him forward, change the formation, do something. I know we don't want to build a team around him. We want to build it around Liao, which makes perfect sense, especially if he's going to renew like the news is saying now. But you got to do something to figure it out with this kid. We spent too much money.
Yeah, you're right. We need to, even if it's stumbling upon a formula that works, I would have liked to have seen him play as a false nine. You know, if Giroud hadn't been ready to start the game against Salernitana tomorrow, and he still might not be, it's still a little bit up in the air. But yeah, if you play De Ketelaere close to goal, I mean, he needs something to happen for a spark to be lit. And I guess law of averages suggests that if you put that player closer to goal, then it's more likely that something will happen. But
even Origi got one.
Yeah, well, yeah, this is it. But he could also look even more lost as well, you know, playing further forward. I would like to see him start as the number 10 tomorrow, just because it's like something's got to click eventually, you would have thought. And also, I don't think that this is necessarily a Brahim Diaz game to play, because they play 3-5-2 and they could probably pin him and there won't be much space between the lines. But yeah, Pioli definitely needs to do something that gets De Ketelaere feeling confident again, because at the moment, and I think you mentioned this in the chat, it's like he gets the ball, he makes a mistake in possession, and then he hides away for the next, you know, for the remainder of the half or however long he's on the pitch. And really, we should be giving him all the confidence. It's taken Leao quite a long time, well, certainly two seasons at least, to get into a position where he feels confident to have a go at the opposition marker whenever he gets the ball. Obviously, it's different being a winger compared to a number 10, but I think it's just important that CDK knows that if he gives the ball away once, it's definitely not the end of the world. Yeah. And if anything, we've had far more wasteful number 10s who contributed just because they got the ball and they tried things so much.
And that's kind of what we're seeing with Brahim, is he's been pushed off the ball countless times every game, but he actually has a decent goal and assist record with us, because he doesn't just stop. And that's the biggest thing, is confidence. Like you said, law of averages. Keep shooting, eventually one's going in.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another thing. I saw a stat, and the number escapes me, but basically the total number of shots that CDK has actually attempted in the league this season is remarkably low. You know, perhaps you could say he's not getting in. That's not his job. He's more setting people up, or he's not getting into the right positions to let fly with shots, but it's like single digits in shots. And you just think to Brahim Diaz, who seems to take at least a couple per game. He's been on these solo runs before and created goals out of nothing. And you even think back to Çalhanoğlu. We'd get frustrated when he'd wind up a shot from 25 yards and it'd fly over the bar. But he felt confident enough to try something, and that was the point. I'd kind of like to see us hopefully 2-0 up against Salernitana tomorrow. CDK comes off the bench for the last half an hour because he's not currently predicted to start, and he just starts letting fly, you know, from be it the edge of the box, be it just crashing the net, hoping for a rebound or something. Just trying to taking matters into his own hands a little bit, you know?
Yeah. That's how it was with Kobe Bryant. You know, people called him selfish because he'd take 100, 120 shots a game, but he put up 50, 60 points. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, that's all you need. So, I don't know. It's just, you just got to keep trying. As soon as you stop trying, that means you lost your confidence. And you just got to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. Spot on. Final question comes from Iba Midupe. Hope I've pronounced that correctly. He says, I hope we take a deal north of 100 million for Leao to avoid a Pato kind of situation in 2012. Galliani was rumoured to have a deal with Tevez as a replacement, who ended up going to Juve while we were stuck with Pato. Okafor is a good replacement. I'd sell Leao now. So that's more an opinion than a question. But he's saying cash in.
I say no. No. It sounds like we're going to renew him. It sounds like he's willing to take the 7 mil, which is half of what he's going to get in the Premier League. So we're not going to find a like-for-like replacement. You know, we know that. The guy's got the most goals and assists in the calendar year for our league, and I think like fifth in all of Europe right now, or I guess for 2022. So we're not going to replicate that. We're simply not. There's no way we could do it, regardless of, if we get 150 mil for him, which is, you know, 50% more than the question was stating. We're not replacing him. It's just not going to happen. Enzo Fernandez is a fantastic, incredible player, but he is a young midfielder with two professional seasons in his career in Europe or whatever it is. Yeah. Benfica, and he was at River Plate before that, I think, but you get what I'm saying. He's going for almost 150 million and he hasn't accomplished anything. Yes. He had obviously the greatest World Cup I've ever seen. That aside, does not make him worth the money that you're paying for him. And that's just the reality of the market nowadays. So we want to replace Leao. We got to get Neymar money, and that's not happening. So you renew him if it's there, and you build your team around him. That's your project.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we currently have the Serie A MVP on our hands, and the major sources are now saying that he's willing to renew a contract that would not make him the highest paid player in the league. Not even close, really. And you want to bet the house, you know, you want to shuffle the deck and yeah, go for someone who's a less proven replacement. I do think Okafor would have been on the list of targets, potentially still is, if Rebic leaves, for example, if we'd had to sell Liao, and it's only natural that we would have looked into replacements to cover our own back. But yeah, like if he wants to stay, then we've got to do that. It might be that he's renewing and we know that he's not going to be here for life, kind of thing. Hopefully he is. Hopefully he feels so attached to the club that he wants to stay as long as he's wanted. But also, like he said himself, there will come a time to try other leagues and experiences in the future. But for us to be able to negotiate a renewal and gain back all the negotiating leverage for teams that come knocking, that would be huge. And then in the meantime, we keep our own star player, and we avoid a massive headache next summer because we've got enough holes to fill coming into the next summer transfer window as it is. You don't want to have to replace your best player.
And that's not out of question either, that he renews and is immediately sold. We saw it with Thiago Silva, you know, with PSG. So it's possible that this is just kind of our way of saying, look, like, we've developed you. Please give us something. Just sign this. And we, gentlemen's agreement and offer over X amount, we'll accept. We can't afford to lose another star player for free. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But if he wants to renew, you renew him, especially at that price.
Yeah, I mean, we've spent the last God knows how long battling to try and convince him, and then when finally convinced, you certainly don't walk away, you know. Thank you to everyone who has made it to the end of the episode. My throat feels a little bit worse for wear, but I hope it wasn't too painful to listen to. We will be back next week to recap the two games against Salernitana and Roma and look ahead to the fixtures that are to come. But I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, thanks for joining.
Yep, Torgan45. And Ollie won't be here next week.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it'll be myself and Madison. He actually started a new job today, so, you know, go congratulate him on that. But we're kind of up in the air on his schedule, so I don't know who's going to be with me.
It might just be you talking to the camera.
Could be a one-man show, yeah. So if you want to hear me rant for, you know, 40 minutes, I might do that. But I'll definitely be here next week, so we'll have something for you.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening, everyone. Like, comment, and subscribe on YouTube. Give us a rating on your favorite podcast listening platform. That would really help us out. And we will catch you next week.
Ante, ecco l'Anteante in area di rigore. Ante, Ibra, gol! Vediamo se è buono. Ce l'ho da buono.